Up next on Coast to Coast, Linda takes a look at a very strange, mysterious ring formation. She'll tell you all about that next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Linda's next story revolves around a father who has died but passed along some information to his son. Linda, another fantastic story.
This one really is. Every once in a while in email, you will get a photograph or an old letter or something that really, really begins to fill in a pattern. And this started on January 17th of this year. I received the following email from Daniel Vieira in Northern California. Quote, "Hi, Linda. I hope this email reaches you. I have a photo I would like to show you of something that landed on the salt fields in Newark, California in 1992. I don't want to just send it off into space and not know if it is you that I'm talking to. Here's my phone number. My name is Daniel Vieira. There is a great story with the picture. It's a great pic of something big that left very large, deep circles and melted down the salt. I hope to hear back from you. A quick call would be awesome so I know it's you. Thank you for your time. You won't be disappointed," close quote. And I wrote back asking if he would attach the photo to an email. And the very next day, on January 18th, he replied, quote, "Hi, Linda, I can make you a copy of the photo later on, but for now, I took a little video of the pic and a photo. Notice the railroad tracks. I believe they are about 2.5 feet wide, so you can get an idea about how big the circle rings were. People from across the bay showed up and had Cargill Salt destroy the circles and took a few people's cameras. But my dad secretly took a photo and then put his camera away. Let me know what you think and we can talk more about it. My dad passed away in 2016. Before then, he didn't want me to show anyone because he thought he would lose his Cargill pension. Just to let you know the size. The circle rings are about 50-plus feet in diameter, and whatever landed melted the salt. There is no way anyone did that with any vehicle. It's hard crystals of salt there. Would have been a mess. People from Lockheed in Mountain View showed up that same morning. I hope to talk to you soon, your friend, Daniel Vieira," close quote. He enclosed an MP4 of his dad's original photo that he videotaped with his iPhone, along with a still photo of the five-ring pattern around a large central circle. I asked Daniel if he could go to a place like Kinko's and get half a dozen high-resolution images made of his father's original secret photograph and do it in at least 300 dots per inch or higher, and he keep some and send me some. And he did that, and the photo clearly shows the original camera's date stamp in the lower right corner. It reads August 28, 1992. Daniel sent a high-resolution photo and copies to me showing these rings around the circle and explained this pattern was embedded into a Cargill Salt Company salt flat at the southern end of San Francisco Bay near Moffett Field. At that same time in the early 1990s, there had been worldwide reports of crop formations in England, Japanese rice paddies, and around the world, including several similar ring patterns in wheat and barley, oats and oilseed rape cereal crops. Daniel's father worked at Cargill starting from age 18, and it was his entire career. He rose to a supervisor foreman and until retirement, and then he's now deceased. Daniel's father secretly photographed the salt formation on August 28, 1992, before he hid his camera from the black-suited men that turned up and ordered that this formation be destroyed. And then he, a supervisor, was ordered to destroy it. Here now, from Northern California, is Daniel Vieira.
My dad, the day when he took this photo, he didn't really say much about it until he actually developed it, and then when he showed me, He didn't want to get fired. That was his career there. Whatever made this mark, he says the bosses came out and people came there to destroy it. He was a plant foreman supervisor. He was one of the bosses. So the people that came there and told him to destroy it had to have been talking directly to my dad.
To make it really clear, the photograph that your father took shows a date of August 28th, 1992.
Oh, yes.
On that day, he did not come home to you and your family and talk about taking a photograph.
I remember him coming home and saying, oh, I should have seen it. He said something weird had happened out there. Something landed out there and it made big marks in the salt. And some big shots or some people, like he would talk like Men in Black or whoever they were. They came there and he said they told the boss to have the people on the salt field destroy it. And they didn't want no pictures or anything like that. And he said that one guy was taking a picture of it, and they took the guy's camera. He didn't tell me that he took a picture of it and had it. And he didn't tell me this until he was pretty close to retiring. And all of a sudden, he had a photo of it. He saved it away and didn't want no one to know nothing about it because I have a habit of calling people like you. You know what I mean? I want to get it out there. Right. And he didn't want me to do that.
Who do you think the Men in Black were? Why would they have had any ability to tell Cargill Salt that a formation, a five-ring pattern in the salt flat, would have to be destroyed?
I don't know. I mean, if somebody had came out there and told me to destroy something like that, I would have told them to go pound sand. I'm a little different than my dad. He came from a different time where, you know, that jaw meant all to him, and he was real serious about his jaw. He didn't want to lose that jaw. He had the same jaw since he was 18. And I guess they came out there and scared him because they had him destroy the pattern and they don't want no one to take photos of it. And then my dad didn't even tell me that he had the photo of it until later on because I guess they scared him. They scared him so much that he wouldn't have nothing and he'd worked his whole life and those people will take it away. He was afraid all the way up until he died. He was afraid for me to do anything with this. They had no right to go on there. And how would they know it was there? Well, they probably seen it. I can see their base. I can see Moffett Field from right where it's a straight shot in this picture. So if they were aware of anything flying around out there and they've seen it come down somewhere, it would have been real easy for them to figure out where. And they did. They came right there and put the fear of God into them.
And Daniel, that is the question that hangs over this entire story. What would have been the reason that men, intel, government, maybe FBI, CIA, would have gone to the manager of Cargill Salt, not very far from NASA's Moffett Field on San Francisco Bay in California, and demand that the five rings around a center circle be destroyed? Why?
They didn't want no one to see it, you know? They don't want any type of proof out there, I guess.
But why?
The secret.
Did your dad tell you at any point in your life from 1992 until he died in 2016, did he ever give you more words of what the Men in Black said or what his own boss said?
They came out there and bullied their way and they made them destroy it. One guy, he had like a, when you get AAA, they give you a little emergency roadside kit, you know, back in the 90s. And they'd have one of those little 35 millimeter type of disposable cameras. I remember my dad telling me they took one of those cameras from one of the guys. You know, they took it from him.
The Men in Black took a camera.
Right. They didn't want no pictures of it. Didn't, you know, nothing about it. And just get rid of it, and that's gone, and that's it. And scared the bejesus out of my dad.
It also raises the question of what was the working relationship between the big aerospace aspects of Moffett Field and the surrounding region and Cargill Salt. Did our government have some kind of an arrangement with Cargill Salt having to do with all the UFO activity that was happening there and that there was some kind of a collaboration in which they had somebody perhaps even working in Cargill Salt who was actually reporting to the intelligence agents in Moffett Field, anything that happened on the salt flat?
Yeah, it's possible, you know, because they're all big companies in that area, and I'm sure, you know, they shake hands and all that.
Daniel, did you say to your dad at any point, back then or later on, before he died, what did the men in the black suits say they were afraid of, or why did they want this ring pattern in the salt flats destroyed?
They just wanted it destroyed. You know, let no one take no photos of it. And that was it. You know, they came there and said, wipe it out.
But why?
Because that's proof. Like my dad said, he has proof. Because something had to be really heavy and really hot to make the marks in this, you know, the way it did.
What is it like to walk on what we're looking at in the photo?
It's like walking on frozen, icy snow, hard as a rock. It's salt crystals, so they're big. It's hard. If we're standing there and somebody pushed you over, you're going to cut your elbow open or cut your arm open. It's sharp, it's hard, you know, and it's not easy to do this.
Daniel, you said you thought the ring pattern was about 75 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
Your dad's photo clearly shows there are five rings around a large central circle. The outer ring looks like it's embedded a few inches into the salt flat and doesn't have any salt on it. But the next ring is higher with salt on it, and then the third ring is embedded without salt. The fourth ring is higher with salt on it, and the fifth ring is embedded without any salt around the large central circle, and that central circle has salt on it. Can you explain why these five rings around the large central circle is significant from everything you know, having worked at this Cargill salt flat?
Well, because nothing could have made this. I mean, it looks like a big bullseye somebody made in the salt that's like 50 to 75 feet wide. There's no tracks around it. This looks like something landed on it, spun in a circle, and just wiped out all the salt, like melted it down. So it looks like it had to have spun. It was spinning on there, and whatever landed and it did a couple of turns or whatever, but it grinded it down and it wiped it out. And it takes a lot to do that.
And what you know about the salt harvester, how difficult would it be to have these smooth rings amid the salt flat?
It would be hard. This would be difficult. There is nothing they have out there, for one thing, like if somebody thought, oh, somebody did that with a backhoe or something. There's no way. It wouldn't be as perfect as it is. You know, the fine salt ring around the top edges, all that wouldn't be there. It would be destroyed. You can't do that in a truck. There's tire tracks of them driving back and forth over it, and it doesn't create the same thing. You know, this is completely different. Something landed there and made these marks. People from across the bay came over there and said, get rid of it. I don't know what happens, but you're going to lose your job or something. But something landed there, something did this, and I'm just glad my father got this picture.
Did you ever say to him, Dad, what do you think this is proof of?
UFOs, yeah, he would say UFOs. Some spaceship landed there. You know, that's, he would say all that. Yeah, exactly.
How did your father take this photo?
He had said he'd gotten it from somebody. One of the guys there snuck a photo. But before I got a hold of you, I've gotten all my dad's stuff after he passed away. And I was going through all his retirement. They had like a little cake or something at his retirement party. He went around and took pictures of his friends, right? And in the right-hand corner of all his pictures is the same date mark. I mean, not the same date, this date, but the same time and date stamp. It was his camera, you know, so he's the one who took this picture.
Right. He didn't want anybody to know because he was worried about losing his job.
Yes, exactly. You know, he even lied to me.
So he even lied to you, his son.
Yeah. Yeah. He was afraid. He was really afraid of this. I know this much, Linda. He used to always come home and say he saw something. You know, he'd describe what he saw, the lights out there by the salt ponds, and he'd go all the way to the top of the mill. He'd watch from there, you know, out towards the bay. And he would always come home with stories that he's seen this and he saw that.
Okay, you're talking about unidentified lights that your father seeing.
Oh, yes.
And did he put it in the category of UFOs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. He's a big believer in all that, yeah.
Do you remember the details of the color, the size, or the shape of any of the aerial phenomena that he described?
He would describe like this V thing, the triangle. He said he's seen a triangle, but all the other times it would be just lights moving out there and then zipping off, you know, or coming close to the salt flats and then zipping away. And then finally when he got this, he was real happy because he said he had proof something landed up there. This was, as he put it, like the damn thing he's been seeing out there at night, you know, the nights we work.
Right. And what did your father say in terms of details of what he saw above or on the salt flats before this photograph? Can you tell in any detail what he came home and talked to you about that he had seen?
One time I remember him telling me he saw like the triangle thing. He said he saw that out there, but he wasn't sure if it was coming from across the bay because that's where the NASA and the Moss Field is out there in the Mountain View area.
And from the Salt Flats, where your dad worked and where you worked a little bit after high school, can you see Moffett Field from where you worked?
Yes, you can. After I blew the picture up before I sent you a copy, mm-hmm. you know, that's when I really discovered that you can actually see the hangar at Moffett Fields from this picture in the background.
And
convincing, Linda. He's convincing.
Yes, and tomorrow also I will have a large, crystal clear image that the only reason tonight is that my website is has been in a revolution to a brand new one, and we're in the process of doing something differently with photos. But by tomorrow night, I'm going to have the large res, high res of these rings, and the same thing on the photograph from the San Luis Valley. They're amazing photographs. And what is very interesting to me is that the whole issue of patterns that were being seen photographed, discussed even on 60 Minutes in 2020 back in the early 90s, was a conversation that I had in England in 1993, so there's a year later, with a man who said that he knew that the Central Intelligence Agency in Langley was getting a bunch of Cray computers to work together, and that they were coordinating with satellites, and that the whole challenge or goal was to have satellites get photographs of every, he used the word and stressed, every formation that was coming down on the surface of the earth, whether it was in cereal crops, whether it was in dirt, whether it was in snow, and in this case, a salt pattern. And that the he said the working hypothesis at Langley was that these were mathematical language or codes that related to some kind of intelligent interaction, and that the hypothesis that they were working under was that the crop formations or the formations in any medium were like markers through time for time travelers, whether they were bending space-time to get or move fast, or whether they were literally time travelers with a very specific goal of a very specific time point on the Earth, and that the language in the patterns, every different pattern, five-ring pattern around a circle like this one of a very specific diameter, how would it relate to other ring patterns, whether it was in England or Japan or South America? And this is why I think that this pattern was so significant, and whoever was studying it decided that this had to be destroyed because this was a highly secret program. They were literally trying to understand and translate mathematical language behind the crop formations that were global in the 1990s.
We're coming back. The Earth's magnetic field is weakening. What does that mean to all of us? That's Linda's next report on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Linda Moulton. How the Earth's magnetic field has been weakening, but how bad is it getting? Linda, this is a scary story.
Well, we know from records that the poles have changed hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of times over the Earth's evolution. But we've never been alive as a conscious species when this has occurred, because the last time was 780,000 years ago. And so humans with consciousness have not been around. And why this is such an interesting time right now is that we now have some information that has been being gathered by a lot of different geophysicists and scientists, and they we can now say and put a number, at least in this regard, that over the past 400 years, the Earth's magnetic field has steadily weakened by 15% now. And that in only the past 160 years, the magnetic field of our planet has weakened by 10%. That's all part of the same package. Whether you're going 400 years or 160 years, there's been a total of 15% decline. Now, the magnetic fields, they give us our north and south poles. It makes it possible for humans to travel with compasses and birds and lots of marine life to navigate. Earth's strong magnetic fields also protect all surface life from the bombardment of harmful radiation from our sun and outer space. Oddly, this weakening magnetic field has been concentrating in one big southern hemisphere region that stretches from Chile to South Africa and is called the South Atlantic Anomaly. It's truly odd because it's in the southern hemisphere, but it's called a reverse flux patch because it has the magnetic field of the northern pole embedded down there. The magnetic field strength is so weak that it is a hazard now for satellites that orbit above the region. The field no longer protects them from radiation, which interferes with satellite electronics. And this has caused computers to crash on the International Space Station during flyovers of the magnetic anomaly. In 2016, Japan's Hitomi X-ray observation satellite was supposed to study black holes and supernovas, but when it passed over this weak magnetic anomaly in the southern hemisphere, the satellite went spinning out of control. And now comes a new study published in the science journal Geophysical Research Letters. The lead investigator was Professor John Tarduno, PhD, professor and chair of the Earth and Environmental Sciences Department at the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York. He and his team worked with archaeologists in the Limpopo River Valley between Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Botswana. There, some of the world's most ancient farmers had a ritual of fire where the Bantu people now live. And the ancient farmers would burn their village completely down if there was a drought or any big problem. And the idea was that if they burned down their village, it would enable everyone to start anew. So it was a kind of ritualistic cleansing in the fire. Well, now Professor Tarduno has discovered that when the ancient clay pots and huts were burned, the intense heat caused magnetic minerals in the burned clay residue to have sort of like little tiny compass needles in the clay. And they have found they aligned with whatever the Earth's magnetic field was at that time, leaving a detailed record of this magnetic field in South Africa going back as far as 1550 BC. So now Professor Tarduno's investigation shows there is something unusual about the core and the mantle boundary underneath South Africa that could have an important impact on the whole Earth global magnetic field. And Professor Tarduno thinks that impact now is this unusually low magnetic field that keeps weakening. Does that mean Earth is finally headed for a magnetic pole reversal, also known as a pole flip? Here now from the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York, is Professor John Tarduno.
We can excavate some of these sites, and it's just like getting a snapshot of the magnetic field at that time during the cooling from these villages that were burnt. We get both the record of the strength of the magnetic field and the intensity of the magnetic field.
When it's described as being anomalous, like an anomalous blob in South Africa that is possibly related to the potential that the north and south magnetic poles could change, why does this anomaly seem to anticipate that possibility?
Well, what we think is happening is that, again, think about the Earth's magnetic field being generated in liquid iron that is moving in the core of the Earth. So we can think about this as a stream. Now, just imagine that in that stream, an eddy has formed. And we think that there is this type of eddy in the flow underneath Africa, and that's responsible for that reverse flux patch. Now, we think that that eddy has formed because the mantle underneath southern Africa is unusual. It's unusually dense and probably unusually hot, and that's actually creating this eddy. So that's important because the creation of this eddy has now kind of disturbed the magnetic field in this region and created this reverse flux patch and weakened the magnetic field. The magnetic anomaly, it kind of is in the southern part of Africa. The mantle anomaly is larger, goes well beyond southern part of Africa into parts of the Indian Ocean and then far to the north under a large part of Africa.
Since the last time that the magnetic poles changed was 780,000 years ago, could you explain why it is that in this 21st century we are seeing scientific papers or general press about will the magnetic poles change this century? Is there something in science, in addition to your electromagnetic blob under South Africa, that seems to be driving this interest in the possibility that we're going to have a magnetic pole change yet this 21st century?
Yeah, first of all, there's very little chance, I would say almost no chance, that the Earth's magnetic field is going to reverse polarity in the next 100 years. So why have you seen articles discussing this? You know, we don't know that the Earth's magnetic field is going to reverse polarity, and we don't know that the changes that we're seeing today are the start of a magnetic reversal. What we do know, however, is that the changes are unusual. The magnetic field is actually changing, dropping in intensity quite rapidly, and that rapid change is very unusual. And the other thing that is intriguing is the pattern of how the magnetic field is changing. This reverse flux patch that we see underneath South Africa, that's actually very similar to what we see in numerical simulations of the magnetic field. This is the type of thing that you see before a magnetic reversal. So there's all these types of evidence that would suggest that, okay, this is actually something quite unusual. Now, what our research has shown is that we think things like the creation of the South Atlantic anomaly may have a recurrent phenomenon, that we see evidence in the archaeomagnetic record that we see things like the South Atlantic anomaly in the past, these types of magnetic changes. So what we're seeing today may continue, and there is a small possibility it could really be the beginning of a magnetic reversal. It could also be the fact that the field will then recover and some eddy will form in the future that will lead to a reversal. But we know enough about the magnetic field to say that these changes do take time. They take time to actually transmit through the mantle. I think the chances of the magnetic field changing in intensity of reversal in the next 100 years is not something that we think is going to happen. However, I should just point out, we don't have to get to the point of a magnetic reversal for there to be societally relevant changes in the magnetic field that we should be concerned about.
Can you explain?
Yeah, so let's suppose the magnetic field continues to decrease for the next decade to hundreds of years, and that's certainly well within the realm of possibilities. That means that the magnetic shield of the Earth is decreasing, the effectiveness of the shielding from solar particles, high-energy particles that are emitted from the sun. So we could have potentially have more damage to satellites we have to worry about. We could potentially have more damage to infrastructure, to power grids during large solar storms. There's even a possibility if the magnetic field continued to decrease, let's say was decreased to less than half of what it is today, that we could start to worry about there being atmospheric effects. Now, what happens is we weaken the magnetic field. We can then have some of these solar particles penetrating deeper into the atmosphere. And this can cause kind of a chain reaction of chemical effects that can start to break down ozone. We could then start to see the creation of ozone holes. We could see them at different latitudes. And then, of course, this raises the question. question of increased levels of skin cancer rates.
And it has decreased 15% in the last 400 years?
Yes. In the last 160 years, it's decreased 9 to 10% or so.
Okay. In another 10, 12 months, we're going to start entering into solar cycle 24. And there are solar physicists who are taking bets with each other about whether 24, 25 to 26 could be going into something like the Maunder minimum back in the 1645 to 1715 time period. And if so, they are already concerned about what is happening with increasing cosmic rays. There are measurements from satellites now that are saying that the cosmic ray rate is increasing quite a bit. And they wonder if it is because we are headed into a very low sunspot cycle. Do you think that there is any tie to the work that you're doing in terms of increasing cosmic rays now?
What I would be most concerned about, and this is not distant from the solar physicists' predictions, is really the possibility of the very large events. We can talk about background solar activity, but we also should be concerned about the large coronal mass ejection events.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we continue to have a weakening magnetic field and we start seeing events like that, yes, I mean, there is reason for some concern.
Because the two might come together, meaning that if we are going to move into a Maunder minimum time period at exactly the same time that there are magnetic anomalies because our planet might be getting ready to do a magnetic pole shift in decades or centuries ahead, that the two combined could mean that we could have fluctuating magnetic fields that are going down more and more.
Well, that's right. Yeah, anytime we have a decreasing magnetic field, we have the potential for coronal mass ejection.
If the magnetic fields go up and down like a yo-yo, and that they go down very low and then bounce back up and down and back over a 100-year period right before a magnetic pole change, what would happen to Earth life?
Well, we have as yet found no evidence in the geological record. We know we've had hundreds of reversals. We see no evidence yet of a mass extinction event associated with a magnetic reversal.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say, from your point of view, that we are living on a very unstable planet?
It's stable and it's unstable. I think what we're finding, if we want to really step back and look at all the marvelous discoveries that are coming out about exoplanets, if we look at what we're discovering so far in exoplanets, we would have to conclude we live in a remarkably stable planet. That probably has a lot to do with why we have life on the planet. We have a large moon that has an incredibly stabilizing effect on the orbit of the planet. We would have much more wild swings in climate if we didn't have the moon around. So if we compare ourselves to exoplanets, we live on a remarkably stable planet. However, we also live in a dynamic planet. It's not a dead planet. It's a planet that is active, and on kind of short time scales, yes, we have geological activity.
And earthquakes are such a part of the fabric of this planet. And a question that listeners have asked me is, what would have been the reason why Gondwanaland, when all of the land masses were one, what would have caused this to start spreading apart into the continents we know today? It seems like such a massive force would have been involved, and what would have caused it?
Well, that's an interesting point, which then gets you back to this question of magma coming up. In that particular case, one of the leading hypotheses is that we have mantle plumes, which don't melt until they get to the surface, but they are an unusually hot mantle that arises from close to the core mantle boundary that may have ponded beneath the Gondwanan lithosphere and then motivated a large-scale rifting in the formation of the Atlantic Ocean.
Then there is that question of why would there have been a change in the plume in the mantle that would have caused it in the first place?
Well, it's probably because the mantle doesn't cool uniformly, and there can be cycles. parts of the mantle may be more cooled efficiently, when there may be other parts that start to heat up. And when those regions of the mantle that haven't cooled off over a sufficiently long amount of time, heat can build up, and we can start potentially having mantle plumes form.
And other clay research in Italy only a few years ago implied that the last pole change, 780,000 years ago, occurred in a century, meaning that it started this up and down yo-yo change in the magnetic field, and that they wrote papers about how this looked in the clay of an Italian lake, that all of this up and down at the end, right before the pole reversal, occurred in 100 years. Now, some scientists disagree or they want more proof, but Professor Tarduno says he thinks it would take maybe 1,000 years for the change to happen.
It's going to happen indeed. Linda, we're going to come back and take conversations with Linda. Phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.